Hey, Swifties! Welcome to a brand new episode of Swiftie School, where together we walk Clownelia Street covering the latest news and Easter eggs from our fearless leader, Taylor Swift. I'm your host, Reagan Bailey, and it is enchanting to have you here. Now that we're out of the woods, let's get into today's episode.
It's another great day to be alive at the same time as Taylor Swift. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 32. We made it. I am so excited. Another week, and we are already towards the end of March, which is absolutely crazy to me. Now, you guys know this podcast has been going on for, I guess, eight, nine months now. And I have a little update for you at the beginning of every episode. I will be doing just a quick disclaimer that although I wish I was, I am not affiliated with Taylor Swift or Taylor Nation in any capacity. And this podcast serves just as a way to express my opinions and my appreciation, which is a perfect segue into today's episode, which I have a very special guest who I am so excited. I've been talking about him for months with you guys. And that is Kevin Sun of @TaylorSwiftHockeyBro over on YouTube. Kevin, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Of course. I'm really excited to introduce Kevin, you guys. Kevin, I don't know how I discovered you. It might have been one of my followers who sent me your YouTube link. I have been thoroughly enjoying all of your live streams throughout the Eras Tour. And for me, what I love about your live stream in particular is that I can still use my phone while watching your live stream because of YouTube, how it minimizes but still stays up on my phone. And that's why I got so hooked on your live streams. And I also am obsessed with the fact that your live streams are interactive and how you do costume changes throughout the show. So tell everyone, if they've never tuned in to your live stream, how you got started and what they can expect if they tune in throughout the rest of the European leg.
So yes, if you haven't met me before, I am Kevin. I do the YouTube live stream, as Regan mentioned, and they are, I guess, a kind of unique take on live streams if you ever watched them before. I do a lot of different types of interactivity. There's a lot of different changes throughout the show. A lot of fun stuff going on, whether that be in the chat or just me and the camera in the corner. And I think it all just kind of started, I guess, like I was kind of inspired by some of the live streams I saw on Instagram, on TikTok, actually during the Kansas City show, because I figured I'd tune in for that show because it was the first one after Speak Now. And a lot of people were clowning for it, and Speak Now is obviously my favorite album. So I really wanted to tune into that show, and I saw the live stream and I was like, maybe I can like do this on YouTube. So there was a bit of a process, a bit of a learning curve in terms of figuring out all the technology, gaining an audience. I think like at first, not very many people watched my live streams at all, but it kind of grew into its own thing through the latter parts of the US leg. I feel like it really picked up steam. I guess like the first time where, you know, I was getting like maybe 1,000 people on the stream was like in Denver and then in Santa Clara a little bit. And I guess it really picked up steam because of the LA announcement. A lot of people tuned in for that on YouTube. And I think what a lot of people really love, maybe even more than the interactivity, is being able to, because YouTube is a landscape format, as you kind of mentioned, like one plus is being able to use it on your phone. So you can have that in the bottom corner or something like that. But another is like a lot of people love to put it on the big screen. So that's, I think, a big draw in terms of having the landscape format versus like the horizontal. And yeah, I think that's totally why a lot of people also tune in as well.
That's a great point. I have put you on the TV because it's just the YouTube app, which is so convenient. Whereas before I was having to do like screen share and then there was lag between audio and everything was a mess. So highly appreciate your service, especially with these crazy hours. I guess we're moving into Paris, which will hopefully be better in terms of like middle of the night streams, but you've been doing the most with staying up. And obviously you have a life outside of doing the live stream. So the fact that you have stayed up and dedicated to the Swifties is truly an honor. Now, you also in your handle have Hockey Bro. I'm curious to know where hockey fits into your love of Taylor Swift and how that came about.
Yeah, no, it was funny because I've actually realized more and more that Taylor Swift and hockey have been kind of intertwined since the beginning. But no, I grew up playing hockey, actually, and it's always been, you know, a sport I really loved a lot. So I guess like, you know, when thinking of some unique identifier of who I am, I was like, oh, I'll just like make this all into one word. And then it turned out to be actually a username that a lot of people liked it.
And it's super memorable.
I think it's like a bit, yeah, it is like a very unique username for sure. It's actually interesting because I guess I was at like a trivia night recently and they asked what team was she like part of an advertising campaign for back in like 2009. And it was actually the Nashville Predators, which was an NHL team. Oh. So really interesting as well. Another thing that actually kind of inspired the username as well is there's a pretty famous NHL player named Trevor Zegras. And he's kind of like from my generation, so like a Gen Z type of person. And he was actually singing I Think You Belong With Me in one of the games. So they caught him like singing it on the bench.
Super fun.
It also inspired me as well to kind of have it. It was a very viral TikTok, I think. It had like over like a million likes or something. But yeah.
We'll have to link that in the description box so people can find it. I did not know that she's done a lot of random early in her career advertisements that anytime they resurface, I always think it's funny because she really doesn't do much advertising outside of like her credit card partnership that she's had for a long time. We don't see much from her. So it's always funny when we see those come about. Now, I'm curious, with YouTube is a tough nut to crack in terms of like algorithm wise. I feel like a lot of people, TikTok is super innate. Instagram, you can figure it out. It's been around forever. Did you have experience? Did you make any sort of YouTube content surrounding either Taylor or personal content prior to doing the live streams, or was it all new from the start?
So I guess kind of the genesis was honestly like sometime early, like 2022, back when Midnights came out, right? Around that time, yeah. I was kind of like thinking about how I kind of wanted to take, you know, my love for Taylor Swift and make it into something that was kind of something a bit more and something I could do in terms of content creation. And I just graduated college at the time as well. So I guess like I was kind of at that point in my life where, you know, it's very different when you graduate college. Like a lot of like social things are, you know, taken away from you and you're like in the real world and you're just figuring out like, oh, like what can I do with social media to make myself connect with other people? And yeah, I originally like started making, I guess, short form videos. So I guess YouTube calls them shorts, right? But I tried to do it on a few different platforms. I did it on Instagram, I did it on TikTok, I did it on YouTube. And it turned out actually, interestingly enough, YouTube happened to be my most successful one with shorts, which kind of led me down that path. I guess like it's interesting because I actually don't really think YouTube has a lot of Swifties compared to the other platforms.
I agree.
But yeah, no, I think like it's something that I guess led me down that path to the point where I was kind of making content. I decided to stop making short form content and start making a bit of longer form content with like commentary videos. And I guess like it kind of, you know, it's come in like ebbs and flows, I guess, in terms of gaining a fan base. But I remember last year, for instance, like right around this time, I was doing clips of the Eras Tour and stuff like that. But that was like before everyone caught on to live streaming. So
yeah,
a lot of people just watch my videos of commentaries of the Eras Tour because there was nowhere else to see clips of the Eras Tour. So yeah, no, it's come in ebbs and flows. I think live streaming has definitely kind of defined the channel like recently, but yeah, I definitely still enjoy making content as well.
Yeah, I didn't mention that at the beginning that Kevin does almost daily videos. Would you call them clowning videos or more like informative Taylor updates? How would you classify them? A little bit of both?
Yeah, I guess just like people would say I'm like a news channel or something like that.
Yeah. Okay, I love that. I'm like over on Swifty School. I'm like, I'm not like the deepest of clowning. I scratch the surface. I can't get super deep. I will do a spreadsheet. But when it starts to get where I'm like crunching numbers and calculating, I'll leave that up to Nikki King. I feel like she does that best. And I wanted to chat with you about your thoughts on 112 Day Theory, because I know you've made some videos on this. Obviously, this sort of picked up steam. I feel like around whenever we had the theory about like November, I think it was like November 29th. Obviously, we've been clowning forever about Reputation, but I'm curious your thoughts in terms of, do you feel like, we know Taylor follows numbers and numerology is huge for her, but do you feel like she is going to continue following this 112-day pattern, or do you think it's over as we know it? What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think like it definitely like reset a little bit in some way. I think it was definitely very valid in 2013, and it was definitely a very good observation from Nikki for sure. I think in 2014, it definitely remains to be seen. I think the biggest thing, though, is a lot of people have like 112 days from the Tortured Poets release. So I guess that is also going to be the day a lot of people look forward to, which I think is an Eras Tour show. It's like August 9th or something like that. So a lot of people have a lot of speculation on that date, how it like kind of aligns with last year as well. But no, I think like 112 day theory, whether it's predictive in the future, I think it is a very interesting thing to just look at, because, you know, a lot of people have, they don't quite realize, I think like there is kind of a system to how they want to operate and release music. And there's probably like optimal time frames to do so. And with Taylor, it just happened to be like kind of 112 days. So I think like it has like a broader, you know, just like an interesting thing to like reflect on. It might not necessarily be true in the future, but the fact that it's linked together so many different dates through the years, like from, I think like folklore, right? So it's linked together that many dates through the years, I think is something that reveals a lot, I guess, about how Taylor does plan things, you know?
I think it's fascinating. I feel like I would struggle to feel like I'm being authentic if I was Taylor when things have been so planned so far in the future. Like, she jokes about hinting towards stuff 3 years in advance, but she actually does. And I'm like, I know myself, and I would definitely not come off as organic as she does with how smooth of an operation that she has going on in the background. I feel like what I'm curious with is how I felt with the announcement of Tortured Poets Department and sort of the like departure from the Eras as we know it, is that with TS11, I'm curious if you agree or disagree. I feel like we're going to move away from sort of what we've seen from her or what we're used to in terms of like typical release schedules and typical album release. 2 years later, she tours. Do you feel like she's going to, I guess, two-parter, do you think she's going to integrate Tortured Poets Department into the Eras tour, or do you think Tortured Poets is going to be its own new era and like chapter in her career?
Yeah, no, it's interesting, I guess, because I was talking about it today, but I think there's a few signs pointing towards Tortured Poets being part of the Eras tour. The other question about like if she'll do the re-records this year, I have no really answer for. I think that remains to be seen about how big she wants to make Tortured Poets. She obviously seems very excited about it. So I think it has a high probability of being a decent era in itself. But I think there's a few points, I guess. It was good you kind of asked that question, because I was kind of just looking at a post a few days ago on Reddit about this person had a really good post in terms of bringing up a lot of different points on why Tortured Poets will be integrated into the Eras tour. One is, you know, it's a natural stopping point around like halfway through the shows. Yeah, releasing the album around then. She's released the Eras tour movie on streaming, so it's a permanent record of that version of the Eras tour. So she shouldn't be afraid to modify things now, because she always has that to look back on. Moreover, there is the removal of merch from her website, which also seems a bit interesting, because it's the middle of the Eras tour right now, and we can only buy the Tortured Poets stuff. So I know like the previous re-records, they've gotten their own Eras tour merch, but I guess like, well, we'll have to see like in terms of, will she bring back like stuff like this, or will it be something different?
Right.
And then I guess like the twos, they kind of thought, you know, maybe the twos are just Eras tour part two. I think there's also the white microphone that she was using before. And I guess her nails are white now, and Tortured Poets is a very white aesthetic. Those are just kind of the points off the top of my head. They definitely had a very strong list of points. I definitely would recommend checking it out, because they also acknowledged, you know, a few counterpoints in terms of, oh, maybe she'll just do it during the acoustic songs, or maybe the shows are too long, or she thinks it'll be unfair. But I feel like she's done set list changes before, I guess. So it's not like completely out of the question. It's just in terms of adding an era in itself is obviously a larger change.
Yeah.
But if she does want to do them just as acoustic songs, which I imagine she would have to at least do that, I think she'd probably have to stop doing the mashups. I don't know. So I think it's a very good marketing opportunity for Tortured Poets, and she does seem to be very excited. There's also the Champagne Problems thing, where she was like five albums. So
that's true.
I don't know. Maybe she will want to tour this album, because it was like something she worked on a couple of years ago. Like for its Genesis was like a couple of years ago, right? So
yeah, directly after Midnights.
Yeah. So you kind of want, I don't know. Maybe she does want to incorporated in, and that would be, I guess, another unprecedented tour.
So you have to tune into Kevin's live stream to find out. I guess I go back and forth, because I could see, I mean, when talking about the album, she has said it felt critical for her to write it. And I'm like, if this felt critical and this body of work means so much to her, I just don't see how she wouldn't. Like you said, at the minimum, it'll be integrated through the surprise songs. But if she is that excited about it and really wants to drum it up for the potential of winning album of the year, I think she's going to have to work really hard to do that. Because, I mean, we've got Ariana Grande, Beyonce, Kacey Musgraves, Lana Del Rey, Taylor Swift, all releasing new music. And I feel like if she is as passionate as she said about this album and really will want it to win, it would be a genius move for her to maybe cut the champagne problems, clapping, you know, cut that down, perhaps cut a song out of Midnights or Folklore, the two longest sets. I would be curious. I don't know if she can make it any longer. I feel like a lot of countries have curfews with the stadiums, and I feel like she's already pushing it. So I don't know if she would be able to lengthen it at all, but I definitely think there's room to cut whether or not people would be happy or not. I also am curious your thoughts. I know you went to Chicago. Was it Chicago Night 1?
Yeah. Before
do you feel like
list, honestly.
Oh no. And yours. Yeah, that stinks. I got to see, I didn't see obviously Long Live Glendale Night 1, but then I got to see it in LA, which was awesome because they were filming, which was cool. But anyways, and that was the night, was it the night the Koi Fish guitar came out? It was around that time, which was awesome. But speaking of, Kevin's favorite album is Speak Now, which I'm so curious about because you said your three favorite songs were You Belong With Me, Love Story, and Clean, which are not on Speak Now. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious what drew you to Speak Now and how that came about.
Oh, yeah. No, I think like the favorite songs, I think I like them a lot because of nostalgia. They might not be like my favorite songs technically, but
okay.
No, they definitely like take me back to a certain age. And I think that has a lot of value in itself because it kind of just like reminds me of, you know, when those songs were playing at certain events and stuff like that, because everybody was playing those songs at the time. But I think like Speak Now, oh, it's an interesting album. I think like it has a lot of songs that I think are a bit less appreciated.
I agree.
And I think like overall the album itself is a little bit less appreciated. Yeah, no, I also just really like the aesthetic of the album. Really liked, you know, everything from how she did her hair at the time to how the Speak Now tour was set up.
Did you go to Speak Now tour?
I was not a Swiftie at the time. but I watched a lot of videos on YouTube about it. So yeah, I think like, yeah, the aesthetic, how the tour was set up, I really, really enjoyed. I guess like there's some songs in the album that I think are very unique, you know, from like different messages, like Back to December or something like that. So yeah, it's got a lot of variety to it, but it's still very sonically cohesive. And yeah, that's why Speak Now is my favorite album.
I feel like Speak Now, I agree with you, is it's underrated, number one. And it's also, it has a good, I don't feel like it has any skips. Whereas for me, I've talked a lot about how I feel like Red is like a very loved album, but to me has a lot of skips. I'm curious, I did an episode recently talking all about track fives, and Dear John is like one of my top five track fives. Where does Dear John as a track five rank for you versus other track fives?
Probably in the middle, actually. No, I think it's actually funny because I guess a lot of people really love that song Speak Now, but for me, I really love a lot of the other songs, actually. I think like Dear John, it has like its moments for sure, but I feel like there's other songs that I kind of empathize with a bit more on Speak Now, but I obviously see, you know, kind of like the power in it. And I feel like the live version is actually really good.
Ooh.
I really liked everything about it. So it had like the fireworks and everything. So it was really cool for sure. I'm talking about like during the Speak Now tour, not during the air.
During the Speak Now tour. Yeah, I figured that's what you meant. Okay, so going back to 112 Day Theory, by the way, if anybody needs a recap on 112 Day Theory, I do have a blog post over on my website, reganbailey.com, where it gives you a full recap of 112 Day Theory. I did write it before we knew about Tortured Poets Torment, so I was clowning in that blog post about the release of, I thought, what was going to be Reputation or debut. But I feel like a lot of people have been now pointing towards 224 because of, it's obviously double or two of 112. And then the beginning of the Eras Tour, the countdown clock is 2 minutes and 24 seconds. I'm curious with Tortured Poets Department if we're perhaps going to have to wait until 2025 for Reputation and debut because of like what you were mentioning. It kind of is that sliding scale of like how much does she want to pump up this album. And I'm kind of in alignment with you. I think she's really going to want to give this as much attention as possible, especially to compete with the other artists that are coming out with new music this year. But I wanted to get your thoughts on Tortured Poets Department so far. There's been such a big conversation surrounding the variants, and a lot of people seemed annoyed by it, which was really surprising to me because I feel like this is nothing new for Taylor. Her marketing strategy has been fairly consistent over the years in terms of like really announcing the album, drumming it up for a couple months, dropping a single, you know, announcing all the variants, and then the album comes out and then a tour. Do you feel like, I know you did a giveaway of the vinyls the other day, do you feel like there's any truth to what people's feelings about the variants and frustration, or are you bothered by it? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, no, I think it's a good example of looking back on and analyzing what Taylor does will help you in the future type of thing. I think like with Midnights, I think, you know, if we haven't learned our lesson, you know, from the previous years, we kind of saw that like she's not afraid to go like all in with these different variants and exclusive tracks on the variants, which I guess like, you know, say what you want about it. I think it's just something you have to be, you know, keep your head up for, just because I think like when she announced that first variant, I think part of the disappointment was also like people were expecting she was going to announce Reputation.
Right.
So it was like a little bit of a letdown in that sense. But once she announced like the first variant, you can almost surely expect more.
Right.
So FOMOing kind of into buying it is probably not the best strategy, but she did make it like limited time, right? So it's also true. Like, I guess a good move on her part there. But yeah, I do kind of understand that a lot of people want to collect vinyls or just want to have like all the vinyls or something like that. But I've never kind of, you know, delved into that type of hobby. So I don't have very, you know, strong opinions about it. I feel like, you know, at least there are more tracks now. I'm sure you can listen to them without having to buy the vinyl, just like with You're Losing Me. And yeah, so I think like it'll definitely, you know, frustrate a lot of people. But I think like the biggest thing is kind of just like, I think with the initial announcement, it was kind of just like, are we getting Reputation Taylor's version? And then she just released like the vinyl. And then it's like exciting because she gave us something, but then it's like not the announcement like we were waiting for type of thing.
I think the buildup for Reputation has become so much that I'm trying to just like pump the brakes in my head and pump the excitement, because at this point I'm feeling like I'm gonna like get let down by how much I've clowned for it and how much we as like a Swiftie community have talked about it. But I'm curious with Tortured Poets Department. I saw this lady on TikTok. I have two thoughts. Speaking of TikTok, with the potential TikTok ban, if it were to go away, I'm curious how it would affect the popularity of Tortured Poets Department, being that TikTok is such a driver for the music industry. I would be curious to see if there would be any sort of correlation, or if she would change up her strategy in terms of marketing if TikTok were to get banned, if she would do anything like grand in terms of adding more of it into the Eras Tour or pushing out singles or whatever it might be if the TikTok ban were to happen before the album came out. But what I was going to say is I saw a lady on TikTok who she does kind of like pop culture news and people can send in blind items. And I'll make sure to have this video linked for you guys in the description. But the video was she got a blind item from someone who works in the music industry and got to attend the like Republic Records listening party for Tortured Poets Department, which apparently was like last week. And they said after listening to the album, not only did they feel like Tortured Poets Department was her best body of work, but they also said it wasn't the quote-unquote breakup album that we were expecting, and that the two obvious songs, which I'm assuming were So Long London and But Daddy I Love Him, were most definitely about Joe and her past relationship, but not in the way that we would like anticipate or expect. So that kind of got my wheels turning, thinking that maybe Midnights was like the breakup album and Tortured Poets Department is sort of like love after heartbreak. Have you done any videos on your thoughts in terms of what this album is going to be like or what the tone or vibe we can expect? I'm curious what you think it's going to be.
Yeah, no, I think like it's interesting because a lot of us are kind of thinking it's going to be, you know, one of those breakup type of albums. But the aesthetic seems to be a lot more, I want to say like subtle, but it kind of like reminds me of Folklore. It just seems like very like gray and I guess like deep and thoughtful and more collective in that sense. And I think it's very interesting that they kind of talked about that. And you mentioned how like TikTok is, you know, a huge driver for the music industry. And I think like Midnights was like a very TikTok-fied album in that sense.
Yeah.
And I think like she kind of knew that in terms of going in and wanting to make that album very big. That's honestly personally like why I kind of rank Midnight's a bit lower on my list, because
that's interesting.
It's kind of, you know, yeah, I think like me and some of my, I guess like people I talk to, I think like fine, like Midnight's, you know, kind of thrives off TikTokification of its lyrics and kind of having those viral like lyrics go through everybody's, you know, For You page. There's like the Bejeweled dance, you know, everything like that. But I think with Tortured Poets, I don't know, like if it is a bit more of a deep, thoughtful type of album, something that isn't, you know, meant to like trend on social media as much or be as fun, maybe that is what it is. I do think though, if that affects like how big the album will be, because I think like Midnight's was pretty big just from, you know, the social popularity of it. If it's something, you know, more like Evermore, but like in terms of like just like how deep it is, I don't know if it's going to be that big of an era. But it seems like she kind of wants it to be a big era. So I don't know how to reconcile those types of things.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. I think to what you said, I could agree with you that Midnight's to me very much felt like a bandwagon album where people who weren't Swifties before Midnight's came out, all of a sudden Midnight's felt like that was the like intro for a lot of people to become a Swiftie. And conveniently, it came out around the same time as the Eras Tour followed, you know, not long after. So I think, yeah, that's an interesting point. Whereas I agree, you ask someone who's a newer Swiftie their thoughts on Folklore Evermore, and they're like, nah, you know, a lot of people aren't super entranced by those. So I would be curious, like you said, if she's going to be able to marry the two of it being, if it is a more sultry, lyric focused, emotional album, if that would be able to translate to social virality, or if it's going to be appeal to maybe more of her older, not older fans, older in terms of like long-term fans, and less so people who discovered her more or got hooked in on social media. And if a TikTok ban did happen, how that would affect, or if it would enhance, you know, conversations surrounding the album. So I did see, now that it's been added to pre-save for Apple Music, that I think it's 7 or 8 of the songs are marked as explicit. So I'm curious, with that being the case, if it's going to rule out, you know, I have a lot of young listeners on this podcast, if it's going to be geared more towards like the millennial, older Gen Z and beyond audience with it being more explicit. And I saw that Scott Swift, 2 Swifties the other day, were like at grocery shopping or something and ran into him and asked him about the album. And he said that this is hands down his favorite that she's ever done. So if that gives us any sort of clues, if her dad likes it, I don't know. Is it going to be like as sexy or emotional as we've been chalking up to be? I'm very curious there. But pivoting to talk kind of about, we talked about maybe her integrating Tortured Poets Harmony into the mashup song or surprise songs, which have been mashups. That started, I believe, on February 17th in Australia. Do you think, number one, when she returns in Paris, do you think that she's going to continue with the mashups and integrate Tortured Poets Department? Or what are your thoughts surrounding mashups, and what has your favorite mashup been to date? That's like a mega question.
I think like it kind of depends on if Tortured Poets is kind of integrated in the set list. If it's integrated in the set list, I think the mashups will continue. If it's not, I think she'll start performing Tortured Poets, just straight up songs. So that's kind of, I think, the two avenues it can go down. Favorite mashup. Now, I have seen all of them because I do the lives. So I did see every single one of these live. It's funny because Woulda, Coulda, Shoulda is one of my favorite songs. But I think from a mashup standpoint, I don't think that was my favorite mashup, because
it was with
Ivy,
right?
A little bit of Ivy. Yeah, a little bit of Ivy. I wasn't like the biggest fan of how she kind of like did it right after the lyric, the girlhood lyric. I felt like it kind of took a little bit away from that because everybody was kind of like singing it and then she went into Ivy. I think maybe looking at these lists of songs and remembering what happened, I think maybe it has to be Long Story Short and The Story of Us. And that was in Singapore Night 2. Yeah, I think a close second would be Sparks Fly and Gold Rush, which was Singapore Night 5.
I feel like Singapore won in general in terms of their songs were, that was where one of my favorites was too, was Mirror Ball with Epiphany. Epiphany is actually one of my favorite. I don't love that song off the album as a whole, but I was shockingly in love with it when it was paired with Mirror Ball. And I think because it made me listen to Epiphany in a different way. But I agree with you. Long Story Short to me is one of her strongest lyrically, just in her entire discography. And I thought it was fun. It made it a little, I don't know. I agree with you. I did like it paired with Story of Us. And I'm curious to everybody listening, we'll put in the question box for you guys to tell us your favorite mashup. Is there any mashup that you are gunning for her to do in the future if she does continue with them?
I haven't put a ton of thought into that. I will say what is cool is I didn't mention before, but I think like what was cool was the day she brought like Sabrina Carpenter out.
Yeah.
I think when that show was almost canceled. So maybe not like a very specific mashup, but it would be very cool if she brought a guest out to do a mashup again. Yeah, I feel like I'm pretty like, you know, ambivalent in terms of like what she chooses to mash things up with. I think she always like knows what she is doing.
Yeah.
The songs always fit together thematically, obviously. But it's funny because I have to mention this. So my show was Chicago Night One. She played the Lakes. And before, actually, she gave a little speech in terms of how she selects the surprise songs. I remember this very clearly because she said like it was an imperfect science. So basically, she played the Lakes because Chicago is obviously near a lake. And we just dyed right. River green. But anyways, yeah, that's why she chose to play the Lakes. It wasn't like a super deep type of thing, but
right.
It was just, you know, kind of like spur of the moment type of thing. And I think like you kind of see that with the Eras Tour too, like shows, you know, that Travis may attend or something like that. She'll do something that is a bit more romantic and a bit more passionate, or sometimes it'll just be like a spur of the moment type of thing. We don't really know what she's feeling that day or something like that. But no, obviously, I think in Paris, I do hope if Paris gets a mashup, I don't know. I'll just say Paris X something. So yeah. I hope they get that mashup if it happens.
Paris will get Paris. London, well, she's doing two runs in London. London in June will get like London Boy, and then August will be So Long London, or they will be the most epic mashup together. I've been gunning for, I know she just did Slut recently. But I have always thought that Me and Slut were like kind of sister songs. That's like a little theory I've always had. The fact they both have exclamation points too. I think they're the only two songs with exclamation points. Obviously, Florida has a bunch of exclamation points that's coming out. But anywho, I want you guys to tune in. Let us know if there's any surprise songs that she has yet to do that you want mashed up or your favorite thus far. Kevin, this was so fun. I can't wait to continue tuning in and seeing all of your silliness. Moving forward,
yes.
I have a clown call next week for anybody who's listening who's interested in joining. Kevin, these clown calls are really fun. You're welcome to join. It's happening on March 25th at 5 p.m. PST, where we hop on Google Meet, and we play games. We do trivia, which is my favorite part of the call. And it's like very hardcore trivia. It's not easy Swiftie trivia. We do hardcore trivia and we do some icebreakers, get to know each other, and then we clown about the latest Swiftivities. And obviously, being that we are less than a month out by the time this episode comes out from Torture Poets from it, we will be talking all about TS11. And then on the following clown call after that, we'll be doing a little listening party and debrief. So I'd love for you guys to join, and you can do that by heading over to my Patreon at patreon.com/SwiftieSchool and drop a comment and let us know if you would like to see Kevin back on the episode. And we will have all of Kevin's social media in the description, where you can tune into the live streams and see all of his silliness and fun and everything moving forward. I had such a fun time today, Kevin. Thanks so much for joining.
Yeah, thanks. And hope to see you again soon.
Yes, you too. All right, we'll see you on the next one.
Hey, bye.
Bye.
Tuning into today's episode. I know all too well how busy life can be, and I am so grateful that you chose to stay. Now just know this is me trying, and I would greatly appreciate if you took a minute to leave a review or maybe share this episode with a fellow Swiftie. Make sure you join my broadcast channel on Instagram for more Swiftivities. And long story short, this love is real, and I'm beyond grateful for your support. See you next time.